Protesters are gathered today at the state capitol, urging Governor Tony Evers to remove the Safer at Home order he recently extended through Memorial Day weekend. Meanwhile, the incidence of new cases in western Wisconsin remains relatively low. Yet the economics of COVID-19's pandemic are evident in western Wisconsin's economy and educational institutions. Schools in the University of Wisconsin system are simultaneously battling new ways of teaching and plunging revenues as they shift into virtual teaching and close dormitories. We'll get an update on COVID-19 in western Wisconsin and then hear from administrators from UW River Falls, UW Eau Claire, and UW Stout today on the West Side. And good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach. We'll be joined in a few minutes by Assistant Chancellor Mike Rindo of UW Eau Claire and Provost David Travis of UW River Falls and Glendalee Rodriguez at UW Stout. First, though, we welcome back Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Rich Kramer from Eau Claire, who will help us get up to speed on what's happening with the pandemic here in western Wisconsin. Rich Kramer, good to have you along.
Glad to be here.
Join the conversation with your question or comment at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. So the number of positive cases of COVID-19 in Wisconsin went over the 5,000 mark yesterday, with a total of 257 deaths statewide. But fewer than 3% of those cases are here in western Wisconsin. We've had fewer than 130 cases total confirmed in the 16-county listening area for those of us who are hearing us live on air. So, Rich Kramer, more and more, we're hearing suggestions that we need to open up the economy.
Oh, yeah, big time. Locally, you know, within the city of Eau Claire, I noticed a couple of things the last couple of days. First, it's just one small shop, but there's a bait shop on Birch Street, for the people that are listening from the city of Eau Claire. But anyway, on Facebook, the owner of this establishment said that they were going to open up today because the governor's original safer at home order was expired at 8 a.m. this morning. There was the extension, of course, and that's going to be taken up by the state Supreme Court. Who knows what's going to happen with that? But either way, this business owner basically said he's opening on Friday because of all the uncertainty, he's just going to do it and
take his chances.
So take his chances. But he did say, you know, what I'm seeing of businesses that are talking about really the need to open up and to do that in a hurry, they're also mentioning a lot of precautions that they're taking, like limiting the number of people in stores, hand sanitizer at the door, you know, those sort of preventative measures. The other thing I noticed, and this is super local and anecdotal, but there's a restaurant near my place, and they had a sandwich board out yesterday that said fish fry from 4 to 8. So that's about the most Wisconsin thing I've seen in a while. But I did not confirm if that's going to be, you know, pick up or take out or if it's going to be dine in. So either way, they had been closed for that pretty much month-long period, and now they're open again. But, yeah, you see there's a lot of economic pain going around due to the closures of all non-essential businesses. That's led to this anger, some sort of a pushback against the governor's order and certainly against the extension. You see it on social media, and it's starting to spill out into public now, you know, with these protests.
Well, and local politicians, particularly legislators, there are certainly some of those who have jumped into that fray as well.
Yeah, you know, State Senator Kathy Bernier is one. And, you know, the local Brian Westrate is known as he's been part of the Republican Party of Wisconsin for a long time. He hasn't held office that I know of, but he's the secretary for that. He was included in a New York Times story about this upcoming protest because he was encouraging this Facebook group that was sort of like the organizing site, I guess, for the protest today that's expected, I think, to have around 15,000 people, perhaps. But he was urging them not to, you know, bring Confederate flags, not to bring AR-15s or AK-47s with them, because that would be bad optics, as he said it. So And also locally, it's a former state legislator, but Adam Jarko over in Balsam Lake on the west side of the state, he, from a while ago has been really upset and really sort of leading calls on social media to open back up.
So the pandemic has taken an economic toll in many parts of society. For those who are already in a fragile economic state, like the homeless, well, that can be especially dicey. How are communities dealing with homelessness in this age of social distancing?
Yeah, it's really been fascinating. I saw there was a local story in the Eau Claire paper about the Sojourner House, which is one of the larger homeless shelters in the city. They partnered up with another shelter provider and moved people into the ice arena in the city because they didn't have enough space. They could house enough people, but they just didn't have the 6-foot distance that was necessary. So they taped off the floor, they put up cots, and you've seen that sort of thing happen in other cities as well. Over in Wausau, there's a homeless shelter there that had to move twice. They first moved into a recreational center at a park, but then they didn't have shower facilities or laundry, and the kitchen wasn't adequate. So then they moved to a building that was donated temporarily to them, a YWCA that fit their needs. Milwaukee, they've set up an old nun's nursing home and turned that into a sort of an isolation facility for homeless individuals or people that just, for the time being, don't have a place to go. That are recovering or symptomatic with COVID-19. That's been the biggest thing. A lot of these shelters are basically locking it down. They're not letting new people come in. They're not, if you don't work, they're not letting you leave and come back because they just don't, they want to try to keep the virus out if possible. Same thing in Madison. They've moved to a recreational facility that does have all the services that they need. As locker rooms, et cetera, sort of like the ice arena in Eau Claire. So it's been really trying for them. And the one thing that was interesting that really stuck with me is, I kind of expected that there would be a big increase in demand for shelter space right now. But the providers that I talked to said that's not the case. They're expecting it once these moratoriums on foreclosures and evictions are up. They expect a big surge then. And also, food banks have said they're expecting a humongous surge of people as we progress. I mean, immediately right now, demand has doubled at some of the food banks I talked to, but they expect it just to increase, and especially the request for financial assistance that some of those shelters provide.
We're getting a coronavirus in Western Wisconsin update from Rich Kramer from WPR News. Rich, one thermometer that we use to indicate economic health is unemployment. And within a matter of weeks, unemployment has moved nationally from near record lows to near record highs. Big story throughout the country. How's it playing out in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's really unprecedented. I mean, that's kind of the cliche word of the day, but the projection, again, we're still talking in projections because the numbers take a while to catch up with reality in terms of the labor statistics put out by the federal government and the state government, for that matter. So the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development did some calculations, and they project that unemployment in Wisconsin is around 27%. That's bananas. I mean, to put it bluntly, that's something that I can't even think back if there's ever been an unemployment rate in Wisconsin at that, that big.
And I think we were in the neighborhood of 3-4%, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of months ago.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, and actually the latest labor statistics numbers for Wisconsin came out this month, and it's at 3.4%, but that's because the numbers, the period that they were measuring the distancing rules hadn't happened yet. So, And it's infecting people in different ways, but, for a lot of people that work, say, cash jobs, not cash jobs, but tip-heavy industries. I talked to a couple of servers, one from Tilden. She's still lucky enough to be able to work at a restaurant. She didn't want to name the restaurant, but it moved from serving tables to working in the kitchen because they're doing pickup. And
sure.
She's lucky enough to be working 2 days a week. But still, you know, the tips are different 2 days a week compared to working almost full time. In her situation, her boyfriend was laid off from a dealership. He was a mechanic. And he hasn't been able to get unemployment insurance. There's been such a crush at the Department of Workforce Development of people trying to sign up for benefits that they're not getting through. For callers in particular, the Department of Workforce Development has urged people to apply online. But still, they're getting something like 100,000 calls per day. And they just... people are waiting for hours and hours and hours, getting disconnected. These are all anecdotal stories, but even when they do get approved, they're not seeing their first paycheck or their check through the unemployment insurance program for something like 3 weeks to a month. So there's just such a surge that it's really crippled the system. And even when you do get the benefits, you know, depending on what they earned while they were working full time or part time, the maximum weekly payout from Wisconsin is $370 per week or in that neighborhood. And because of the stimulus, the CARES Act that was passed by Congress and signed by President Donald Trump, that adds an additional $600 per week. So that's a big, I mean, that's a big increase. But still, people are waiting. Some people haven't gotten it yet.
Yeah.
And also with that $600 on top of the $370 in Wisconsin, there's concerns that it might be a disincentive for people to go back to work because they could be making more than they did at their original job. So it's a very complicated sort of a situation.
Rich, we'll be hearing in a few minutes from members of the leadership teams at UW-Stout, UW-River Falls, and UW-Eau Claire about how those campuses are trying to adjust in the wake of COVID-19. As part of your beat covering higher education for WPR, you reported that the UW system is expecting at least $170 million in lost revenue. What's the damage at the local campuses, and what's causing it?
It's significant. So what's causing it is, I think, the big chunk of it, and I'll be interested to hear what the guests say, but I think a big chunk has been the refunds that campuses have offered for students that, you know, were told to basically go home, and for students that didn't live on campus anymore, they were housing and dining services fees were refunded. So that was a big chunk of revenue that disappeared instantly. And there's also all kinds of spillover effects that I'm not quite sure about, but, you know, with not having students on campus, they're not, you know, they're not buying things on campus. You know, I'm not sure, but it's just been a big shakeup. And then the thing that I'm watching is, whether or not enrollment declines, and UW-Eau Claire put out a statement or some snippets from a briefing that Chancellor Jim Schmidt held yesterday, I believe, and it said that there's projections, no hard numbers right now, but projections that enrollment would decline about 10%, and that's in line with what I've been hearing from consultants. Again, that's anecdotal. It's not anything hard, no hard evidence, because the way I understand it, at most campuses, maybe all in the UW system, generally May 1st is the last day to commit. You get an offer from a school, you have until May 1st to say, yeah, I'm going to enroll. And once they commit, then you get some more firm numbers in terms of what enrollment might look like. So that's a big thing that I'm watching, and some campuses have even offered to extend that deadline to June 1st because of all the craziness.
Yeah.
So, and in terms of local impacts, these are numbers that were put out April 10th.
2 weeks
ago.
By now
it might as well be from, you know, 1918. But UW-Eau Claire said that it was $7.1 million. The briefing yesterday mentioned a number north of $8 million for let me see here. I'm just going to look through. River Falls was at April 10th, just over $6 million impact, and Stout was just under $6 million. So, in normal times, these are huge deficits that have to be dealt with. And in the past, because of, you know, budget cuts or you know, what have you, you'd seen campuses have to do early retirement programs, you know, all sorts of things to try to cut labor costs. And we're seeing that right now with the furloughs. The furlough announcements, at least that I've seen from River Falls, Stout, and Eau Claire, are not concrete. The gist of it is that there's going to be some sort of furloughs, but that the details are still being worked out right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe your guests will give some specifics today, but what I'm seeing at other campuses around the state is anything from, they're talking about intermittent furloughs and then consecutive day furloughs. So the intermittent is you have to take, say, 14 furlough days within a year's time or something like that, or, you know, one furlough day a month. That generally seems to be applying to faculty and academic staff, but for staff that are not able to do their jobs remotely, you know, I'm thinking something like grounds crews or people that are on campus and, you know, they don't teach or anything. They're talking about consecutive days furloughs. Some campuses have announced 3 months of consecutive day furloughs. In a sense, you're unemployed from May through August. So people are able to apply for unemployment in those situations. But again, it's pretty unprecedented. And it's hard to keep up with it.
Yeah, that word unprecedented keeps creeping up, and it continues to be valid. Rich Kramer, thanks for popping in with another update on the state of the pandemic in western Wisconsin. Good to have you along.
Yeah, glad to do it, Dean. Thanks.
Rich reports from WPR, or for WPR, from his base in Eau Claire. You can find his reports at WPR.org. Next on the West Side, we spend the rest of the hour with administrators from three University of Wisconsin schools based in western Wisconsin. Your questions and comments are welcome. Are you a student or faculty member at one of those schools? How have the changes affected the way you learn or the way you teach? Email your thoughts at ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or you can call us 800-228-5619 to join the conversation. 800-228-5619. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. Welcome back to The West Side. We're joined for the rest of the hour by three administrators representing the University of Wisconsin System Schools here in western Wisconsin. David Travis is provost for the University of Wisconsin River Falls. David Travis, good to have you along today.
Good morning, Dean. Thank you.
Glenda Lee Rodriguez is interim provost at UW-Stout. Glenda Lee Rodriguez, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Mike Rindo is the assistant chancellor for university relations and facilities at University of Wisconsin Eau Claire. Mike Rindo, good to have you back on the West Side.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So as we move into this conversation, I do want to disclose for the sake of our audience that I, myself, am an employee of the University of Wisconsin system, UW-Madison in particular. So I want to start our conversation by jumping off my previous segment with Rich Kramer. There were two big pieces of news coming out of the University of Wisconsin system in recent days. One is that the system has lost $168 million in lost revenue and added expenses, and as Rich mentioned, that was as of 2 weeks ago. Other expenses have probably cropped up in the meantime. The other big piece of news was that the UW Board of Regents last week gave schools the option of implementing furloughs, that is, forced leave without pay, as a means of balancing budgets. So, Glenda Lee Rodriguez, UW-Stout's shortfall as of April 10th was reported to be $5.8 million. Rich Kramer shared that. As you're observing it, where is Stout right now in dealing with that shortfall?
So those numbers do continue to rise, and our current number is $6.6 million now.
Okay. So what actions, what's happening on the administrative level as you look for ways to explore what to do about that shortfall?
So as was mentioned earlier in the call, now that we've received the permission from the system, we are looking at ways to address those deficits and looking at trying to capture some savings. As was also mentioned, we don't have details as of yet, but we are looking at the options afforded through those permissions with the system regarding furloughs.
Now, David Travis, your chancellor told us earlier this week that UW River Falls plans to use consecutive and intermittent furloughs, both of those options Rich Kramer was talking about, and actually starting the May 4th to make up for what was reported 2 weeks ago as a $6.3 million deficit at your school. Can you give us any more, can you shed any more light on how furloughs are going to look at River Falls?
Yes, we're working on plans actually as we speak. We had a deadline of earlier this week for the May 4th furloughs that would begin. We have to give proper notice to individuals, and we are looking at a combination of consecutive day furloughs for, I would say, a reasonably large number of people that are just simply unable to work right now due to the telecommuting or simply lack of students here that they're typically hired and employed to support. So we'll be looking at some consecutive day furloughs, which would mean a week or more, in some cases several consecutive weeks, for a large number of people on campus in May and June. And then starting with the new fiscal year in July, we'll be looking at a combination of some of those continuing, but then a large number of people doing a mandatory furlough of anywhere from 5 to 10 days. We're still working out those details.
UW-Eau Claire's deficit was reported as $7.1 million 2 weeks ago, but in briefing that Rich Kramer mentioned for faculty, staff, and student leaders yesterday, Chancellor James Schmidt updated that deficit estimate to $8.6 million. Mike Rindo, how is UW-Eau Claire planning to manage that shortfall?
So let me just clarify something that Rich said earlier about something that Chancellor Schmidt said at the briefing that we're doing weekly with faculty staff. There was a scenario that the chancellor mapped out that said that the hypothetical could be what if there were a 10% reduction in enrollment. Just to be clear, we're not projecting that. And in fact, our enrollments are looking quite strong going into the fall at this point, both at UW-Eau Claire and UW-Eau Claire Barron County. So I just wanted to clarify that. We're actually up a little bit at both of those campuses. So in answer to your question about the $8.6 million, we made a lot of difficult decisions in the 2015 budget reduction exercise that we had to go through. Well, it was more of an exercise. It was actually an execution of the budget reduction, and that put us on very strong financial foundation heading into this. We are actually at a point where we're going to be reinvesting into the campus before this COVID hit. So we're going to be able to handle that $8.6 million reduction through reserves and through cash that we currently have on hand. But it's going to drain our reserves, and so it does put us in a position where we're also going to have to be looking at furloughs, which we're having discussions with the campus now. And most likely the first ones that would occur would be the consecutive day furloughs, similar to what's going on with the other campuses. We don't know exactly the numbers or the duration at this point.
Mm-hmm. David Travis, what are the main contributors to the shortfalls at UW-River Falls and the other institutions as you understand it? Rich Kramer touched on that a little bit, but where is the biggest hit?
Well, the biggest hit, obviously, is in where we had to provide refunds for students that were here in the residence halls and dining services, other assorted fees that we had to give back or were unable to ask people to continue paying. So a lot of that is what we call program revenue funding, and that's the biggest hole because we continue to pay those employees even though we weren't bringing that revenue in, and we've reached now close to a $7 million deficit, which is primarily made up of those funds. But there's other lost revenue. We had, let's just as an example, we had study abroad trips scheduled for a large number of our students. That's one of the things we're very committed to here at River Falls. And of course, when the pandemic hit, we had to cancel all of our international study abroad trips. We had to bring students home. We had to refund costs for those trips, down payments, those sorts of things. So it's really a lot of things that we've already incurred. And then, as has been mentioned, we are anticipating a downturn in enrollment. We were already anticipating that, and we anticipate it quite likely to be at least 5 to 10% more than what we were anticipating prior to the COVID-19. And that would be obviously a tuition loss. So it's really a combination of fees and tuition. Fees primarily now, more likely tuition later.
Are you getting a sense of why people who maybe were expecting to attend UW-River Falls are deciding not to?
Well, we're hoping they will still come, but we're just trying to anticipate various contingencies that could occur. And looking at the possibility of sort of a hybrid scenario in the fall where we will still offer face-to-face classes, hopefully, but anticipating that students might not feel comfortable coming back to campus yet. We may still have health risks that discourage gatherings of certain sizes. And so we also know there's a financial issue going on here. I mean, the report earlier talked about how much everyone's struggling right now, the unemployment numbers. And so we know that some people simply might not be able to afford to come back in the fall. So it's really a combination of many things. And I think it puts the campuses like ours in a challenging position because we really have to position ourselves to serve students in multiple ways. They may come back. They may come back in large numbers, or they may be not willing to come back in large enough numbers where we still have to support them online.
I think scenario planning is something that not only the University of Wisconsin is doing, but there are a lot of businesses and nonprofits out there trying to do that very sort of thing. And Mike Grindo, you referenced already that Chancellor Schmidt told UW-Eau Claire employees that senior leadership is doing scenario planning for reduced enrollment or a possible emergency state budget reduction. Is it a sign that the worst is yet to come, or is it just trying to be precautionary?
Well, I think, as David said, there are so many variables that we're looking at. It's really unpredictable what's going to be occurring. We right now are planning to hold face-to-face classes in the fall, and we are planning to have students back in residence in the fall. But that may not occur. If there were to be a sharp uptick in COVID-19 cases in our part of the state, it doesn't take a lot for you to, you know, really be able to see that as a scenario. For example, very rural Clark County, directly adjacent to Eau Claire County, just had a doubling of cases this past week. Now, it's still a modest number. They're still under 20. But what we've seen all the way nationally and internationally is that this virus can just take off and like a wildfire. And so you have to understand that that is a possibility. And, you know, we have a communal situation in our campuses, and our students, especially in the residence halls, live in close proximity to each other. So the chancellor has undertaken a steering group. We're going to be appointing that to be planning for various scenarios going into the fall based on the assumption that we're going to open. And there's a lot of things that have to be taken into consideration. Do you do hybrid instruction where some of it's online and some of it's in classrooms, and are you doing social distancing in the classroom? What kind of disinfectant or deep cleaning would you do in residence halls or other areas to ensure that students and staff that are interacting are safe? Do you do a lot more testing, and are we going to be able to get testing ramped up? So there's so many variables that we're looking at, and you really can't have the answers until you have more information. And that's one of the vexing things about what's happening with this outbreak, is it's changing day to day to day, and we learn more. And I know the state is trying to ramp up more testing, and fortunately in this area we have a lot of healthcare assets. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking at.
In the past few decades, whenever things get tight in the University of Wisconsin system, the two-year campuses are one thing that seems to get particular attention. Is there an opportunity for some savings if one were to close those? UW-Eau Claire took over management of the two-year school in Rice Lake. When I went there, it was called University of Wisconsin-Center Barron County. It's now known as UW-Eau Claire Barron County. Is the future existence of that campus in danger as the university does its scenario planning?
No, there's no discussion whatsoever around any kind of closure in that campus. And in fact, our colleagues in our Rice Lake campus are doing great work, and we're seeing an actual increase in enrollment in that campus at this point. Now, part of that is we've done an innovative program called Launch, where some students that are actually enrolled in Barron County would be living on the Eau Claire campus, but be taught by instructors at UW-Eau Claire Barron County. We're also seeing, you know, some increased interest, we think, from students potentially in that region, because anecdotally, what we're hearing is that more and more students may wish to stay closer to home or choose to live at home while they're going to college rather than the traditional approach where they may become a residential student.
And
so,
by having two campuses,
continuing to work with them.
Yeah, by having two campuses, you're closer to home. There are two different opportunities for that in this region. That's interesting. We're talking to Mike Rindo from UW-Eau Claire, David Travis from UW-River Falls, and Glendalee Rodriguez from UW-Stout. We're talking about the adjustments that are being made on campuses here in western Wisconsin and throughout the state and probably throughout the nation as safer at home rules take place and teaching goes from in classroom to virtual. Before we go to break, I want to talk a little bit about managing anxiety. I mean, anxiety is a major theme with this pandemic. I don't know of anybody who's immune to it. But if I think about, university staff shifting from in-classroom teaching to online teaching in a matter of days without having, planned that already, well, that's already stressful. And then you add to that the lingering threat of budget cuts that could include furloughs and probably will include furloughs, and the fact that faculty and staff are in this stay-at-home mode, pretty hard to manage the rumor mill. An additional element at UW-Stout is the fact that your new chancellor, Catherine Frank, was on campus for a whole 2 weeks before the campus was closed. So, Glendalee Rodriguez, how is Stout's administration providing support to its teaching staff at this time?
Yeah, that's a great point, right? So we had a new chancellor join us on March 1st, and what an amazing month and a half for her. She's been doing a great job, but obviously I'm part of that administrative team too. And so we've been providing support in a variety of ways. And I wanted to go back to when we were discussing scenario planning and to talk about a really important group to think about in scenario planning too is our faculty and our staff, because many of them have family members with immunocompromised systems or they themselves, and some of them are older. And so not only are we scenario planning for the students, but it's also keeping their safety in mind as well. So support has come in a variety of ways. We have a campus emergency operations team that's starting that third week in March, started meeting multiple times a day, and then is now currently meeting three times a week and sending communications to the campus. We also have created a mentorship program for our faculty and staff. And so that was just a sign of how the community was ready to just help each other. So we immediately had over 30 instructors, faculty and staff wanting to serve and willing to serve, and coordinated a mentorship program to help as instructors were facing all of the disruption and changes that were occurring. We also have telehealth services and our EAP program to just really support the personal side to all of this, and we have maintained communications as best we can. And with that, I want to just highlight some things too about Stout that folks may not know. Even though we are a polytechnic and people immediately think of just the physical hands-on, over a third of our portfolio before COVID was already online. We really do serve a lot of non-traditional students, and that's at the core of our institution. So that's been an asset for us as this has happened, because we had many of our programs that were already doing that instruction online and could really help bring others up to speed and help each other out.
That's the voice of Glendalee Rodriguez. She's interim provost at the University of Wisconsin-Stout. Also joining us today are David Travis, provost at UW-River Falls, and assistant chancellor at UW-Eau Claire, Mike Rindo. Have you been affected by the closing of the UW campuses to in-person training? Join us by phone at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'd like to hear your story. And certainly, if you have a question or comment to direct toward our guests, we'd appreciate that as well. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back with our guests from the University of Wisconsin campuses here in western Wisconsin, David Travis, the provost at UW-River Falls, Glendalee Rodriguez, the interim provost at University of Wisconsin-Stout, and assistant chancellor for university relations and facilities at UW-Eau Claire, Mike Rindo. Mike Rindo, I want to shift to you for a second, if we could. We're glad to have you here, all of you, as guests on the West Side. Our original invitation went out to your chancellors, all of whom have been guests on this show in the past. But the chancellors are all in a meeting this morning with UW System President Ray Cross. Mike Rindo, can you tell us anything about the purpose of that meeting?
Well, the chancellors and their executive teams have been in constant communication with UW System and President Cross. We've been having meetings multiple times a week. And so it's just a situation where the chancellors are having that ongoing conversation, and so we're unable to join you today.
Two of our guests today are provosts at their schools, the people who are the senior academic administrators on their campuses. Glendalee Rodriguez, walk us through the work that was done on the Stout campus to prepare for online teaching. You mentioned that several of your courses are already there, at least in part, but talk about that process of transition.
So it was quite interesting for Stout as well. We were one of the first campuses to have spring break occurring. So we were making decisions just a couple days before both students and folks sort of dispersed for spring break. But the transition, people stepped up and we did it as quickly as we could. And we started to just really centralize communications, create websites that really brought everything together. We created a COVID-19 website. We created a COVID-19 email account so we could just start to both present information, gather questions from the campus community, and start to address that. So we've got a pretty robust resource there, and it's divided by audience. So we have a section for students, families, and friends. We have a section that's specifically just all employee-related communications. And then the third bucket is for our faculty and instructional staff, and that also then includes resources around instruction. So we very quickly, just tried to pull things together. As I mentioned, that mentorship program as well. We have what's called a teaching and learning center, which is common for all of the universities, which has already been a resource for people to really gather and talk about teaching and learning. So that just went virtual in the sense of just connecting people through our learning management system, which is called Canvas. You can have discussions and check-ins and chats with people. So we've created sort of virtual office hours where people are connecting and continuing those conversations about the transitions. Simultaneously, we were tracking what needs we needed, right? We needed to now think about equipment needs and did we need to start transitioning to things that could be mailed out to students so they could continue doing certain activities. And so part of that is contributing to some of those COVID losses because we quickly started to transition and start to identify what we needed to put in place to help those classes continue. And in some cases, those are additional resources that were unanticipated. And so we were documenting that as well.
David Travis, as provost of UW-River Falls, were there any particular courses that were particularly difficult or even impossible to teach online?
Yes, typically we run into issues. If you look at this, the coverage of online courses, typically on any campus during normal times, there's a struggle in getting science and hands-on types of courses into the virtual learning world. It's just, and we're also a big ag campus, and we do a lot with animals and plants. And so, of course, those are the sorts of experiences you want students to have in person, be able to touch and feel and smell and all of those things. And these are the kind of things that are really challenging to move into the virtual world. I just have to really give kudos to our faculty in doing a lot of, as best we could, in stimulating the learning that students would have had face-to-face in the online world. But certainly, for spring semester, we were in a situation where we didn't really have a chance. We had to make a conversion to virtual learning for all courses and just do the best we could. I think as we go forward, we're trying to do a little more strategic planning on what courses to put out there. If we have to do some sort of hybrid scenarios we talked about earlier, what courses are most appropriate to put out there in the virtual learning world, and which should we hold back and try to protect as possible face-to-face classes, say in the fall semester, if we end up doing some kind of split approach like that. Those are the ones that typically we're going to need students, if we can make it happen, to still come to campus and do learning.
Mike Rindo, student faculty hands-on research is a big marketing tool you've used to attract students to UW-Eau Claire. How does that happen in virtual environments?
I think the challenges are the same at Eau Claire as they are at the other institutions. institutions. I just saw, for example, a very clever video from our music department yesterday where students who were not in the same, obviously, physical environment, but they were actually members of one of our jazz ensembles, and they were doing a jazz piece that had been specially composed, and they were on headsets and playing back and forth. So that's one way that we're able to do those kinds of original works that's part of the research that we have. The other thing that we're doing this year is we're doing our 28th annual student research event. It's the Celebration of Excellence in Research and Creative Activity. We have to have an acronym for it, so we call it CIRCA. It's actually coming up this week, but we're doing it in, you know, that virtual delivery system. And so while it's challenging, our faculty and instructional staff have really done a remarkable job of being able to pivot, to be able to ensure that we're continuing those kinds of research activities and creative activities, and being able to showcase those in a virtual setting rather than a physical setting this coming week.
800-228-5615 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation, 800-228-5615. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's what Mary did. Mary shares this comment. The level of physical presence by university students who come from all over the Midwest is challenging to any community wanting to open, albeit strategically, and yet local business has relied on student and staff and faculty for their revenues, and community impacts are huge. Each of your schools is a big economic driver within your communities. Mike Rindo, is the university conversing at all with local business leaders as it considers next steps for the fall?
We are, and in fact, this week there was an economic recovery task force that was formed between the Chamber of Commerce and some of our local governments and businesses, and university will be an active participant in that. We've already been working to help our community through this pandemic and the emergency that is created. As an example, I'm serving as the public information officer for the Eau Claire City County Health Department Emergency Response, and there are many other examples of making our resources available. The call center for the pandemic for the City County Health Department is actually housed in one of our university facilities. We had a phone bank in place that we were able to do that. So, yeah, we will be active participants in how we go from where we are now to reengaging in economic activity, including having our students be able to, you know, be employees again in a safe manner. The safety, health, and well-being of our faculty, staff, and students is our highest priority, so that's always our background.
David Travis, we talked earlier in the program that only 3% of the coronavirus cases diagnosed in Wisconsin are in this 16-county area of west central Wisconsin. And a number of western Wisconsin residents are standing on the Capitol grounds in Madison right now protesting Governor Evers' Safer at Home orders, saying that they are more than what is needed in this part of the state. Is UW River Falls getting pressure from local leaders to get students back in the fall?
I don't think we're feeling that yet. I think people are aware of the risks and recognizing that there are a lot of unknowns, and we're in a very challenging position. We are kind of in an odd place here in western Wisconsin, and I have a background in geography, so this is somewhat fascinating to me. We're relying on state-level data to make a lot of decisions that, as you said, most of the cases are in the southeastern part of the state in the big urban areas. And so you could argue in some ways that those decisions really are more appropriate for that part of the state, and that we should be given some freedom to make local decisions here, given that we don't have nearly as many cases. But as was also pointed out a minute ago by Mike, students come from all over the place, and many of them come from southern Wisconsin. And so we have students coming to our campus from places that are very high in cases right now. And so I think we have to weigh all those different considerations. I'm not feeling the pressure to make the decision. I'm just getting a lot of questions from students and faculty as to when the decision will be made. And I think we're balancing those sort of state level guidances that we're receiving with what we're seeing locally. I'm guessing by midsummer, certainly by June or early July, we'll have to make a decision about fall.
Economic impact isn't the only impact the university has on its communities. cultural impact is significant, too. Your schools do a lot of outreach through concerts and forums, things that the whole community is able to take advantage of. Glendalee, I've noticed that Stout has continued or tried to continue that. Last night, Chancellor Frank took part in a virtual panel discussion on the local impacts of the pandemic in a discussion that was sponsored by the Honors College and the Social Science Department at Stout. And this coming Monday night, Stout's Menard Center for the Study of Institutions and Innovation will be hosting an online conversation about the COVID-19 pandemic's effect on civil liberties. So here at a time when your school is considering difficult measures to balance the budget, Glendalee Rodriguez, why is it a priority to continue to provide that community outreach role?
Well, it's the core part of our mission, right? I mean, it's part of the Wisconsin idea that we're connected within the community and really about the, you know, that collaboration across all of our stakeholders. Now, I would point to that, you know, Stout has a really strong history with advisory boards that bring in people who hire our students and alumni and other stakeholders. And we've tried to continue those conversations virtually with them as well. So, for example, our art and design program, they would have typically had a week of portfolio reviews that would have been face-to-face. Well, they transitioned to that virtually, and we're able to still have those important panel conversations with our, you know, industry representatives, employers, graduates, alumni, and the students networking. So it's just one more piece that's just a core to I think what we're all trying to do is continue to build community and just keep working together through this.
In the couple seconds that we have remaining, Glendalee Rodriguez, diversity and inclusion is a big guiding principle throughout the University of Wisconsin system. You yourself are the advisor for UW-Stout student organization Latinos Unidos. What challenges are presented to those efforts by these new conditions of teaching and learning?
So just to make a correction there, I was currently not the advisor to Latinos Unidos. But I think, you know, you bring up a very, very important point that this is not something that's affecting everybody equally, and our underrepresented populations are definitely experiencing this in a way that we continue to try to reach out to them. So we are, you know, very actively connecting with students. When we approached how to provide resources to students, too, I mean, we did things such as hotspots and just through those mentorship networks that we have through our student services groups. We have many, many first-generation college students. And so as we thought about where they've gone, right, so they had to leave the dorms. What does that home look like for them? That's an individual level, you know, diversity there too in terms of how they're trying to balance that home life with their schooling. So we continue to just reach out and afford students multiple ways to remain connected.
I assume everybody's gone to a virtual commencement. Graduation would be coming up next month. David Travis, what's the date for UW River Falls?
We're looking at a date in early August. I believe it's August the 8th, if I can remember correctly.
Okay. Mike Rindo, how does graduation look at UW-Eau Claire?
We're still hoping to do some kind of an in-person ceremony. We've not moved to virtual, but we don't have a date.
And how about Stout?
So Stout's conducting a virtual commencement on May 9th at 10 a.m., and then we also have afforded all of our students two opportunities, a date in August and then also our December commencement to walk in person if they're able and they choose.
Very good. Thank you all for joining us today. Glendalee Rodriguez is the interim provost at UW-Stout. David Travis, the provost at UW-River Falls. Mike Rindo, assistant chancellor at University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Good to have you all along. Kate Spranger took the calls and manages publicity for the West Side. Thanks to her today. Thanks also to Rich Kramer for joining us for the first segment for our pandemic update. Next week, we talk about the effects that local businesses and nonprofits of the Safer at Home orders, how they're feeling it, and we explore some community-wide efforts to help those places come out on the other side of COVID-19. I'm Dean Kallenbach. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio.